This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, June 28th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the Federal Emergency Management Agency administrator was in Louisville yesterday to meet with local and county officials about Marshall Fire recovery. We'll have an update. Are you familiar with the term riparian rights? You will be after today's Water Word. We'll have the details about how the recently signed co-management agreement for Bears Ears National Monument will look like on the ground, and its potential as a model for other tribal stakeholders in the country. And we'll go to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines, and then it's How on Earth. Today, the KGNU Science Show explores if bird songs help a bird fall in love, and questions if it gets even better with a dose of dopamine. And a CU medical professor asks, what if nature wants us to be fat? At 9 a.m. comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, Joanne Cole will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Colorado voters have until tonight at 7 p.m. to turn in their ballots for the state's primary election. Voters can turn in their ballots at a drop box or vote in person at a voter service polling center run by their county election officials. Along with dropping off a ballot, vote centers are also the venue for voters to register to vote, update their voter registration, request a replacement ballot, or vote using adaptive devices and facilities for persons with disabilities. For services at a voter service polling center, voters are required to supply an acceptable form of identification, and the Colorado Secretary of State website lists the many forms of ID accepted. Submitting a ballot by mail is not an option, as it is too late for voters to mail back their ballot, as today's postmark will not count. Colorado Newsline reports unaffiliated voters are giving Republicans an edge over Democrats in the primary election turnout. As of June 24th, nearly 30% of the Republican vote was from voters not affiliated with any party, double the amount from the state's last midterm primary election in 2018. 17th Judicial District Attorney Brian Mason, along with other elected officials and partner agencies, announced yesterday the expansion of a pilot program aimed to alleviate intimate partner violence. Mason said the program works to identify domestic violence victims early and to provide wraparound services and keeping them away from their abusers. Among the services provided are hotel vouchers, legal help, medical care, mental health treatments, Spanish-speaking services, and child protection. The program, called Domestic Violence High Risk Team, which started in Brighton and Thornton, will expand throughout Adams and Broomfield counties because of a $2 million federal funding grant secured in the appropriations bill by Congressional Representatives Ed Perlmutter, Jason Crow, and Joe Neguse, whose districts include Adams and Broomfield counties. According to Congressman Crow and Perlmutter, who spoke at yesterday's announcement, the funding and program is in response to skyrocketing rates of domestic and intimate partner abuse since the COVID-19 pandemic. Boulder's Fraser Retirement Community will deliver grants to underserved low-income seniors. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Boulder's Fraser Retirement Community has launched a peer-to-peer $2.1 million endowment program for Boulder County organizations. The Boulder Reporting Lab reports that a 9-member advisory committee from Fraser researched the needs of underserved county seniors over 8 months, establishing grant criteria, reviewing proposals, and visiting each organization they plan to assist. The peer-to-peer giving program grew out of money repurposed from Fraser's $5.1 million purchase of Mount Calvary Lutheran Church in 2015, which is being developed for affordable senior housing. They plan to target not just low-income seniors, but to help those residents that fall in the gaps between government-funded programs. Some may be disabled, don't have internet access or transportation, or maybe are unaware what social services are available to them. The first five grants, totaling $75,000, were presented on June 22nd to mostly government organizations. The first recipients are Boulder Housing Partners Foundation, Boulder Area Agency on Aging, City of Boulder Older Adult Services, Friends of Longmont Senior Services, and City of Louisville Senior Services. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
Workers at Denver Public Schools, including paraprofessionals, groundskeepers, and nutritionists, announced they will rally today in front of DPS headquarters, calling on the school district to pay workers at least $20 per hour. Rally organizers say the school district pays poverty wages to hundreds of its workers and are calling on DPS to meet union demands. The rally is scheduled to begin at 3:30 p.m. at 1860 Lincoln Street, Denver. Vandals destroyed two murals marking the 10-year anniversary of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, according to the Denver Westword. The incidents occurred shortly after their anniversary unveiling in mid-June. The locations of the damaged murals, which the artist has since replaced, were at the Denver Public Library branches of Eugene Field and Virginia Village. The murals, part of an installation set throughout Boulder and the four Denver Public Library branches, are photographs of an undocumented person in Colorado with a QR code explaining the individual's story and their experience being undocumented. Artist Etika Pacha created the murals as part of the Boulder Modus Theater's UndocuAmerica's Monologues project, where undocumented immigrants relate their dehumanizing experiences through monologue performances. Denver City Council has adopted a volume-based trash system. KGNU's James Swenson has more.
Denver City Council approved a new program that will extend recycling and compost collection services Monday. Lawmakers hope to reduce trash that gets sent to the landfill. For more than a decade, city lawmakers have worked on a plan to significantly change the way recycling and compost is billed to residents. Currently, Denver offers trash and recycling for a flat fee. The new program will incentivize composting and recycling by charging residents based on their size of trash bin and quantity sent to the landfill. The program begins January 1st. For KGNU, I'm James Swenson.
Today's weather includes sunny skies with highs in the low 90s. Tonight's skies will be mostly clear in Denver and partly cloudy in Boulder and Fort Collins. Tonight's lows will be in the upper 50s, low 60s. The National Weather Service says there will be elevated fire weather conditions across much of the plains this afternoon due to low humidity and breezy winds. The State Health Department has also issued an ozone action alert for many metro Front Range counties. The current temperature in Boulder is 63 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Several local elected officials from Boulder County, Louisville, Superior, along with U.S. Representative Joe Neguse, met with the Federal Emergency Management Agency Administrator Deanne Criswell yesterday in Louisville. The group met as part of a roundtable discussion on the progress of the Marshall Fire recovery. KGNU's Rosanna Longo-Better was there.
We're at 6 months this week since the Marshall Fire. And what was impressive when I came here on some of my early visits was how the group of federal, state, and local officials quickly came together to identify what the problems were, with the problems that we could anticipate in the future, and come up with solutions on how to achieve the outcomes that these communities needed to jumpstart their recovery efforts. And through the conversations today, we were able to actually hear about this progress and how, by when everybody comes together and we're working together to solve these problems, how much opportunity and how much progress can be made.
Criswell expressed how important it is to come back and check on the recovery.
We're reaching that point in the recovery process where some of the more complicated projects tend to come out, and we want to make sure that we are all synced and I have an understanding, or my team has an understanding of what those challenges that they might be facing are. And so for me, it was just a matter of making sure that we're still meeting the needs of our customers, which in this case, the state and locals, and have a road path forward to helping them achieve the outcomes that they want to achieve. And then I'll turn it over to both the mayors if there's something specific you want to say.
Thank you. Yeah, so we are a small government here in Louisville. I'm Mayor Stolzman, mayor of Louisville. And there are only 20,000 people in our town. And we would not be able to handle a recovery like this alone with a disaster of this size, the biggest wildfire in state history. And so we really need federal support. So there are just costs that we are incurring on a basis that are just far too quick and far exceed our revenues to be able to cover them all. So we talked about the details of reimbursement and what things are eligible and ineligible so we can recover as quickly as possible. And I'm so grateful for all the support from the federal government. People talk about FEMA and things being difficult and hard, or the federal government being difficult and hard. And so far in this process, that's not been our experience at all. We've had a tremendous amount of support and care, and I am eternally grateful for that.
Yeah, my message for this Clint Folsom, mayor of Superior, and my message for the administrator was just a thank you for the coordinated cleanup, the fact that it got going so quickly and that it seems to be going very well. We've made significant progress and we're on track to essentially be wrapping up in the month of July, which is actually a faster, much faster pace than we heard in the very early days after this disaster. We heard that coordinated cleanup might take a year, a year and a half, and it's nowhere near that time frame. So we're very grateful that things are moving along quicker. In fact, it's moving along quicker than some people's private debris removal efforts in some cases, which is providing another source of challenges.
Chris will share her concern about the number of underinsured individuals affected by the wildfire and their specific needs.
FEMA's programs offer a jump start to help with the recovery process. We do understand that there's a lot of underinsured individuals out here, and so one of the roles that we play is trying to bring in our other partners that can assist with that, whether that's our nonprofit partners, other federal agencies like HUD or SBA, which has home loans. But all of these programs aren't necessarily the right program for every individual. And so we want to be able to work through case management to help understand the specific unmet needs that a family might be having and help them develop their own individual recovery plan. And so those are some of the services that we can also bring is case management to help families like that understand the types of resources that would potentially be available.
That was Administrator Deanne Criswell providing an update to the local press on the wildfire recovery efforts. Commissioner Martha Lochman spoke about the significance of FEMA administrators' visit and the update on the wildfire efforts.
So it was a conversation with the town of Superior, the city of Lewisville, and of course unincorporated Boulder County, where we have more than 1,000 people who've lost their homes. And so the conversation for us was around road construction of roads that were affected in the fire but continue to be affected, not just wear and tear, but damaged by the debris removal. And so how does that cost Boulder County? Because we have the PPDR contract, we have the contract for the debris removal. And so it was a very important conversation to hear those concerns. And the other conversation is how does one prepare for the climate disaster that will continue to happen, whether it's floods or fires or winter storms, et cetera. We are just prone to it. And so what is our responsibility to go look at our insurance policies, et cetera? And there were a variety of other conversation topics that were touched on, but those were really some of the initial updates. The fact that the administrator is here from FEMA in Colorado is very significant and it's important. And we need to be very thankful that we have those connections and we continue to build those relationships at a federal, state, and local level.
For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo-Better.
This is Water Words, a fast explanation of a bit of water lingo. I'm Hanalee Myers. Today's water word is riparian rights. Riparian rights is a legal term for a type of water right. The Water Education Foundation defines riparian rights as giving the owners of land that physically touches a water source a right to access and use water from that source. In most of the West, the legal framework allocating water rights is prior appropriation, which you can learn about in a separate Water Words episode. Riparian rights are more common in states with more water. Some states, such as Texas and California, use a hybrid system and recognize both riparian and appropriative water rights. So, in addition to linking the water right to the ownership of land touching the water source, What makes a riparian right different from a prior appropriation water right? For one, riparian rights cannot be lost if the water isn't used. How much water a riparian rights holder can use depends on how much water can be reasonably used on the owner's land. But that water must be used in the same watershed as the water source. No diverting the water to other watersheds is allowed. Finally, riparian rights are also considered to be of equal priority. So in times of drought, the impact of a water shortage is spread among all the riparian water rights holders. So if you come across the term riparian right and think of a type of water right that is more common in wet places and more focused on water access than water scarcity, you're on the right track to understanding riparian rights. You can watch an animated video of this water word explanation on YouTube. Just search for the Water Desk channel. You can also find Water Words, the Water Buffs podcast, and take a deep dive into water issues and news at waterdesk.org.
Earlier this month, federal agencies and five tribes signed a historic co-management agreement for Bears Ears National Monument. KZMU's Justin Higginbottom speaks to an expert about what that will look like on the ground and its potential as a model for other tribal stakeholders in the country.
Tribal representatives in this corner of Utah have pushed for the co-management of their ancestral land since the end of the Obama administration. Patrick Gonzalez Rogers of the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition says they had models, like the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission in Oregon.
The four tribes that are off the Columbia River are really an effective kind of both steward and conservator, as well as go to the general kind of health and maintenance of the Columbia tributary.
Gonzalez Rogers says that commission now employs over 100 staff members with a budget of over $25 million. The group is a major player in salmon restoration in the Northwest. And the Bears Ears Commission could have a similar impact in our region.
We are distinct because this is the first time a national monument has come under a co-management kind of dynamic.
The commission could also serve as a model to others.
I do think that it does provide a contemporary example. And then to a lesser extent, I think it is portable for many BIPOC organizations that operate in the conservation space as also a model.
It's unclear how day-to-day management of Bears Ears will change with more Native American input. The five tribes involved have been working on a land management plan for the last 4 years. Gonzalez Rogers says it's just about finished.
Ours is much more an imprimatur or manifesto relative to cultural, traditional Native values. Now, it does touch upon specific topics, but it is really advancing what that means from a Native sense on land management. And it really sets up what I think are cultural precepts and instructions towards the stewardship of land.
That plan will be compared to the Bureau of Land Management and National Forest Service proposals. Gonzalez Rogers says they won't be in competition, but more additive. Although the new management scheme will still have challenges.
I think the obvious thing that's in the room now is, are we going to go back to this kind of volleying back and forth with the Utah state delegation as well as their federal delegation?
Utah Attorney General Sean Reyes is expected to sue the Biden administration over the area's status as a national monument. And a new administration could always rescind the monument's protections.
Everyone wants a particular stability and consistency relative to the monument.
Gonzalez Rogers says that there's room for dialogue between groups in the region, and a lot of middle ground can be found in Bears Ears. Justin Higginbottom, Rocky Mountain Community Radio.
We now check in with KGNU's comment line and what's on the minds of listeners this week.
Food for thought. It is certainly noteworthy to have a 21st century American president, namely President Biden, praise the courage of journalists who are risking their lives in Ukraine to report on the war crimes committed by Putin and his armed forces. Of course, these very same American journalists were prevented from reporting on the war crimes committed during the Iraq and Afghanistan wars unleashed by the George W. Bush administration, who cleverly, but constitutionally questionable, divided the press in two: embedded journalists, i.e. loyal to the Bush-Cheney cause, versus independent journalists, i.e. guardians of truth. This Made in USA demonizing of credible journalism has had serious consequences, internationally speaking. Copycatting the U.S. is the rule du jour. To add insult to injury, the world-renowned Australian journalist and publisher Julian Assange, who had the courage to expose some of the crimes against humanity committed by the USA in Iraq and Afghanistan, has been charged with violating the U.S. Espionage Act of 1917 as guarantee to make extradition possible. Julian Assange has been sitting behind asylum walls and British prison bars in London for 10 years now, thanks to the Bush-Cheney administration, with every following administration ratcheting up the pressure. Looks like Alexei Navalny of Russia and Julian Assange of Australia have a lot in common. And to think that the George W. Bush administration went so far as to introduce a measure stating that if any American were ever to be forced to face the International Criminal Court, U.S. military forces would intervene. Considering that the U.S. declaration of war against Iraq and Afghanistan has been declared a crime against humanity in and of itself, what is really needed here is a Nuremberg trial. Hypocrisy, right, left, and center. This is not to forget Great Britain's involvement in this entire nightmare scenario. Speaking of hypocrisy, criminalizing abortion is utilizing the playbook of fascism, short and simple. Hitler declared abortion a crime against the state. He also criminalized homosexuality. The same goes for the French fascist Pétain, Mussolini of Italy, and Franco of Spain. Perhaps it is time the so-called age of fascism should be thought of as including our own. Neoconservatism and or neoliberalism, a U.S. ideology being fascism on steroids. Thank you.
I want to thank KGNU for allowing the League of Women Voters to broadcast the debate that they held for county sheriff. There are two Democrats running against each other, and I was so impressed by both of them, I still don't know who I'm voting for. But I think it's wonderful that the station is using the League of Women Voters debates and airing them. They're very objective, and they do a very good job of questioning candidates running for office. And this morning, it's Wednesday, was no exception. It was a very interesting hour. So thank you, KGNU.
I recommend that you listen to the Connections program on this past Friday. It's a unique opportunity to get a perspective on Supreme Court events and the related history of all that and how we got there. It's part of a series, a very important series of dialogues between Duncan Campbell and Lisa Grace, a former attorney with the Department of Justice, and insider view of how this situation emerged and where it's going. I highly recommend you take a listen to Friday's program, which was incredibly timely.
If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a message at our listener comment line at 303 847-9911. We play those messages back on Tuesday mornings. That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacey Johnson, Steve Miller, James Swinson, Alexis Kenyon, Rosanna Longo-Better, Hannah Lee Myers, and Justin Higginbottom for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after these news headlines from the BBC.